So tonight we're going to finish up the study on President Trump and whether or not Christians should be supporting him. And I'll leave that up to you to determine, given all these things. So we're down to page 23, point Roman numeral number 9. And we're going to talk about how President Trump is not fiscally conservative, and that means that financially he's not conservative when it comes to the budget of the federal government. So a lot of Republicans are always known for being supposedly small government, and they're supposed to be small spenders, and they always want to cut the budget back and so on. And that usually doesn't happen when they get in office, and this is the case here too. The federal debt is increasing at a rate that's closely approaching what President Obama did in his first years in office when we were in the depths of the Great Recession. And Obama was doing like $1.5 trillion deficits every year, which means that the government was spending $1.5 trillion more than they took in. But President Trump is spending over $1 trillion a year now, and this is supposed to be the greatest economy ever. We're not in the depths of a recession or anything, and he's outpacing Obama, especially in his last years. So he's increased it by $1 trillion a year, and you can easily figure this out. By just looking at the numbers, the debt was $19.9 trillion when Trump was sworn into office on January 20th, 2017, and the federal debt is now $22.5 trillion as of August 19th, 2019 anyway. And if you just do the math, that's $2.6 trillion divided by 2.583 years, and that's over $1 trillion a year. So the budget's actually... On paper, they don't say $1 trillion a year. They say less than that. But when you look at what the debt is actually increasing every year, it's increasing by $1 trillion. It's just stuff that's off budget that they don't count because they want the number to be lower. But anyway, you can see all the debt clock and all that stuff to see the proof of that statistic. Here's an article from Politico. This is from July 22nd, 2019. It says, with a new bipartisan budget deal that does nothing to cut federal spending, Trump is on track for another $1 trillion deficit this year. And there's no reason to believe that the following fiscal year will be any different with ballooning deficits from higher spending. The 2017 tax cuts, Trump's signature legislative achievement, which slashed revenue, and none of the entitlement reforms long preached by Republican leaders on Capitol Hill. Candidate Trump bragged that he would pay off the entire federal debt in 8 years, and he did. He was actually on Bill O'Reilly talking about he was going to pay the debt, the whole debt, pay the whole thing off in 20 or in 8 years, which is
how
just.
How could you pay off 20 some trillion?
Yeah, it's impossible. It's absolutely. It was just the most ludicrous statement, and O'Reilly actually called him out on it. He's like, "Well, how's that going to work? The economy is just going to be so great." He's like, "Yeah, but how are you going to pay off the debt? The economy is just going to be so wonderful." But how are you going to pay off the debt? And he would never answer the question. It's a simple question. You'd have to bring in, we're going into debt $1 trillion, so you'd have to bring in more than that just to be even, and then you'd have to bring in multiple trillion. I mean, divide, 8 or 20 by 8, and, you're talking over $2.5 trillion a year of surplus that you'd have to bring in to pay down that debt. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, but he did actually claim that. let's see here. So where was I? He paid off the debt in 8 years, but President Trump is governing as if deficits don't matter. In fact, Trump is approaching the level of red ink from President Obama's first term when Obama racked up $1 trillion deficits 4 years in a row. Trump is on pace to do the same, starting with this year's yawning deficit of more than $1 trillion, according to budget estimates. But there are huge differences. Trump has a growing economy with historically low unemployment and a soaring stock market, while Obama was battling a brutal downturn in the economy during the worst recession in 80 years, making it much harder to curb federal spending. Now, unfortunately, what Obama did with that spending after the financial crisis just made the next one a lot worse. If he would have just let it go and didn't do any spending and just let the economy get rid of all the malinvestment and just go through the pain, then we've been a lot better off. But they don't like to do that. Here's another quote here for you. This is from an article in The Balance called U.S. Debt by President by Dollar and Percent. It says, Donald Trump, they're comparing Trump and Obama. So Donald Trump is projected in Table S-10 in the fiscal year 2020 budget. Trump plans to add $5.088 trillion to the debt in his first term. That's a 30% increase from the $20.245 trillion debt at the end of Obama's last budget in fiscal year 2017. If he remains in office for a second term, he plans to add $9.1 trillion. Trump had promised to eliminate the debt during his campaign. And then Barack Obama, he added $8.588 trillion, a 74% increase from the $11.657 trillion debt at the end of Bush's last budget. So Trump is, what is that noise? Oh. So anyway, Trump is on par to add more debt than Obama did in his 8 years if Trump is elected again. And we'll see who wins this bet. Bev and I have a bet going on. And so I bet that Trump's going to be a one-termer. She bets he's going to be a two-termer. And we have wagered a penny on this. So we're going to see who wins. And I will be collecting if I win. I'm not going to forget about this. So I hope I win too, but we'll see. Now, those numbers don't factor in the considerable increase in government spending that will almost certainly occur when the next recession hits, whenever that happens. I think it's already begun from some of the numbers that we're seeing. Actually, the manufacturing numbers that just came out, I think it was just today, manufacturing has contracted for the first time since the recession back in 08. So it seems like we're already starting, but I guess we'll see in the coming months or year or so. Okay, this is another problem with President Trump, and this is not unique to him, but he believes that he has unlimited power as president, and he even jokes about being president for life. And this is not, I remember Bush said similar things to that, you know, if I was a dictator, it'd be a lot easier, and blah, 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 and they like the idea of having unlimited power. And I think Trump, according to what he says here, he believes that he actually has that. He said this publicly, and you can click on this article. It was from The Week. Trump, I have an article too, where I have the right to do whatever I want as president. This was in July of this year. And there's a video in the link where you can actually hear him say it himself. He says, then I have an article too, where I have the right to do whatever I want as president. But I don't even talk about that. But you don't have the right in Article 2 to do whatever you want as president. You have the right to do whatever the Constitution specifically says you have the authority to do. You can't do whatever you want. As a matter of fact, the president has very, very little power, actually. We can't declare war. He can run a war once it's declared, right? And he can sign bills into law, and he can veto bills, and he can give executive orders executing the laws that have been passed by Congress, so ordering members of his cabinet to do certain things, or ordering, you know, the certain departments to fulfill the laws that have been passed. But that really, a president has very, very little power, or should. Now the president's like a king, and it's been that way for a long time, but it's not supposed to be. Here's another one. This is where Trump was kind of joking about being president for life. This is a quote from CNN Politics. But anyway, they have an audio recording of him saying it. So usually if it's from CNN or something like that, if I have an audio recording or a video, it's okay. But I'm not going to take their word for much of anything. But anyway, it says, in the closed-door remarks, a recording of which was obtained by CNN, Trump also praised China's President Xi Jinping for recently consolidating power and extending his political tenure, or potential tenure, musing he wouldn't mind making such a maneuver himself. Quote, he's now president for life. This is Trump talking about Xi. He's now president for life. President for life. No, he's great, Trump said. And look, he was able to do that. I think it's great. Maybe we'll have to give that a shot someday. And then everybody laughs. So anyway, he's joking. But you know there's truth in jokes a lot of times. And so who knows? People. Yeah, exactly. And people talked about Bush. He was going to declare himself dictator and be president forever. And Obama was going to do the same thing. So everybody's always has these theories. And I'm not saying Trump's going to do that. But just a little bit concerning that, you know, he thinks he has unlimited power and jokes about staying president forever. And then President Trump is a hypocrite, and I'm not using this word, you know, flippantly or anything. I'm going to show you very demonstrably here. First of all, turn to Matthew 23, verse 28. just see what the Lord Jesus Christ had to say about hypocrisy. He didn't think very highly of it. Matthew 23 and verse 28, he said to the Pharisees, "Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." There's a lot of people out there that look good on the outside, and they say the right things. They say, "God bless America." They say, "I'm a Christian," whatever. But look at what they do, and that's what you really want to check out. Look at 1 Timothy 4 and verse 2. That's what I encourage people to... If you want to support President Trump, look at what he does. Well, look at what he says himself, actually, and consider that. Because just because he says, "I'm a Christian," and whatever, doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot if he doesn't act that way. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 2. Verse 1, "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron." And when I read you some of these quotes before and after he was elected, you wonder if the conscience isn't seared with a hot iron, because he can, with a straight face, say the exact opposite thing. I mean, the thing that he condemned, he now praises. It's crazy. But I'll show you all this stuff. Yes.
How does the Bible define hypocrisy exactly?
Oh, it's saying one thing and doing another. Like when okay. Jesus talked about the Pharisees, that they bind heavy burdens on men but won't lift one of their fingers.
Is it similar to lying?
There's a similarity there. It's pretending to be something you're not, basically. You're feigning yourself.
Pretending to be.
Yeah. So like the Pharisees, they pretended to be these pious people. And they said that these people ought to do all these things, but Jesus said they wouldn't lift one of their fingers to do it themselves.
So if a pastor tells the congregation that you should be saving money, but he's not saving money,
right,
is that hypocrisy?
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, to tell somebody to do something and do the exact opposite is hypocrisy, yes. So when Trump was a candidate, he said that the stock market was a big, fat, ugly bubble. That was his exact words, which I'll read you here in a little bit. He said this in 2016 when he was running. Here's what he said here. This is in 2015 and 2016. And these are YouTube videos, so you can actually watch him say these things yourself. I'm not making it up. And even though I give all these quotes and all these links, and people still say, "Why don't you prove what you're saying?" or, you know, "You're believing the fake news media." No, I'm believing what he said out of his own mouth. He said, "Reduce our $18 trillion in debt, because believe me, we're in a bubble. We have artificially low interest rates. We have a stock market that frankly has been good to me, but I still hate to see what's happening. We have a stock market that is so bloated. Be careful of a bubble, because what you've seen in the past might be small potatoes compared to what happens, so be very careful." And I'll tell you, listen to what Trump said when he was a candidate, because he was dead on right. All these quotes that I'm giving you, when he was a candidate, he was absolutely spot on right. And that's why I don't believe he's mistaken now, because he knew and he called it out when a lot of other people were not. He knew exactly what he was talking about when he was a candidate. And now he says the exact opposite and calls for the exact opposite. So he's not mistaken. He's doing it on purpose. He knows what he's doing. He's lying. Here's another quote. "The stock market now is starting to go down. We're sitting on a big, beautiful bubble." That was in March 1st, 2016. The other quote was in June 16th, 2015, when he first announced his candidacy. Here's another quote for you. This is also on YouTube. You can watch it yourself. He says, "We have the worst revival of an economy since the Great Depression." Absolutely true. "And believe me, we're in a bubble right now. And the only thing that looks good is the stock market. But if you raise interest rates even a little bit, that's going to come crashing down." And he is exactly right. That's what happened. When they raised interest rates at the end of last year, the stock market came crashing down. It lost a whole ton of points. And it happened right when they started raising interest rates. He was exactly right. "We are in a big, fat, ugly bubble. And we better be awfully careful. And we have a Fed that's doing political things. This Janet Yellen of the Fed. The Fed is doing political by keeping the interest rates at this level. And believe me, the day Obama goes off and he leaves goes out to the golf course for the rest of his life to play golf, when they raise interest rates, you're going to see some very bad things happen, because the Fed is not doing their job. the Fed is being more political than Secretary Clinton. He said that in the debate there, right, just right before the election, September 29th, 2016. And he called it. When they raise interest rates, the market's going to crash. And that's exactly what happened. And you know what he's calling for now? He's saying the Fed shouldn't have raised interest rates and they should lower them. And I'll give you all the quotes. He's saying they should do the exact same thing that he condemned them for in 2015 and 16. Now, President Trump says we have the greatest economy in the history of the country, and he says the stock market is a barometer of his success. So before the stock market was a big fat ugly bubble, now it's his stock market and it's the greatest thing ever. This is crazy. During President Trump's first 15 months after being elected, he tweeted about how great the stock market was at least 60 times. He condemned the stock market when he was running, and now he tweets about how wonderful it is 60 times in the first 15 months. Here's a quote for you. This is from CNBC on February 6, 2018. Since he won the presidency, Donald Trump has become Wall Street's cheerleader-in-chief. As markets climbed at the end of 2016 and throughout 2017, the president promoted a string of new milestones or records. He explicitly tied the rally to his policies and optimism about the economy's prospects during his administration. Presidents have typically tried to limit talk about stock market success because equities can just as easily slide. But Trump has embraced the stock market run since Election Day 2016, tweeting about stocks at least 60 times and highlighting markets during numerous public appearances. I don't know how the guy can say it with a straight face. I mean, how can you condemn something and then as soon as you get into office then take credit for the thing you condemned? It's just crazy. And it's not only is it crazy, it's just highly stupid. Because if you take credit for the stock market when it's at all-time highs, when it's been rising for 10 years, it's going to come down eventually. And if it comes down on your watch and you've taken credit for it going up, whose fault is it goes down? Of course, you'll blame somebody else, but how can you?
That's why they're saying that presidents have typically tried to limit talk about
right.
It because it's too unsure.
They might mention it once in a while, but they're not out there touting, look what I did, my policy, stock market's highest it's been, you know, that's not what they normally do because they have a little bit of sense anyway. So without any sense of hypocrisy, President Trump, who just over a month before the election warned that the stock market was a big fat ugly bubble, began to boast about the level of the market less than 2 months after being elected. 2 months later. Listen to this. These are his own Twitter feeds here, so this you don't have to take anybody's word for it. You can read it yourself. This is what he wrote. This is on December 26, 2016. He's not even president yet. It's just, you know, a month and a half after the election. He says, the world was gloomy before I won. There was no hope. Now the market is up nearly 10% and Christmas spending is over $1 trillion. It was a big fat ugly bubble 2 months before that. Now it's wonderful. It's bigger and fatter, you know, 10% up, but it's awesome now. February 16, 2017, stock market hits new high with longest winning streak in decades. Great level of confidence and optimism even before the tax plan rollout. Then here's one, you can see him speaking on YouTube. This is July 6, 2017. We're doing tremendously well. Our stock market just hit an all-time high. On Twitter again, July 15, 2017, stock market hit another all-time high yesterday despite the Russian hoax story. Also, jobs numbers are starting to look very good. Here's another Twitter, November 7, 2017. This is a year after he was elected. Stock market hit yet another all-time record high today. There is great confidence in the moves that my administration is making, working very hard on tax cuts for the middle class, companies, and jobs. Here's another Twitter, December 31st, 2017. If the Dems, Crooked Hillary, got elected, your stocks would be down 50% from values on Election Day. Now they have a great future and just beginning. Now, you would assume from these quotes that under Barack Obama's 8 years, the stock market was just down, down, down. It was just in the doldrums, and then Trump gets elected and it booms. I'm going to show you the charts. I guarantee you, you wouldn't be able to pick out on the chart where Trump's election is. It's the same chart. It's been going up for 10 years. But he's going to take credit for it, of course, once he gets in. But before he got in, it was a big fat ugly bubble. Here's another one. Let me see. Is this Twitter? This is on Twitter. This is November 5th, 2018. It says Dow goes from 18,589 on November 9th, 2016 to 25,075 today for a new all-time record. Jumped 1,000 points in last 5 weeks. Record fastest 1,000-point move in history. This is all about the Make America Great Again agenda. Jobs, jobs, jobs. $6 trillion in value created. No, Mr. Trump, it's a bubble. It's because of all the money the Fed's pumping in, which just goes into the stock market. It's not value. It's just all fake prosperity that's going to poof, evaporate one of these days. This is going to come back to bite him very badly, I do believe. When this bubble economy does burst and come crashing down to earth, then all of a sudden, what are you going to do? I mean, the economy's booming because of my policies. And then what happened, right? There's been no change in the trajectory of the stock market in the last 10 years, which includes all of President Obama's tenure. So just look at this chart of the stock market, if you have an outline there, over the last 10 years, and please point out to me where the election of Donald Trump is based on this chart. So can you see, right there it is from 2009 to 19, can you see any major change in that market that would be Trump's election? It's all one chart. I mean, there's little bumps here and there. You notice it started to go down in 2015, but then it started to pick back up before the election. You know, the election's at the end of 16. It had been rising from that little fall that it had. And that was before, and nobody thought Trump was going to be elected until election night, right? I mean, it wasn't like the market was expecting it. It was starting to climb whenever he was going to be elected or something. There's no difference in the chart. It's just one long chart. But you'd have Trump to believe you, to have you believe that it was just horrible before he got in and now it's wonderful. Candidate Trump said that the unemployment numbers and the other statistics on the economy were fake numbers and they were hiding a bad economy. And he was absolutely right. He said the economy was in terrible shape during Obama's presidency. Here's a quote. This is, you can hear him say this himself. It's on YouTube. This is in September 29th, 2016. He says, did we already read this one? I think we already read this one. Yeah. This is the same quote where he said we're in a big fat ugly bubble, so I won't read it again, but you remember that. He said that the Fed's doing political things, and whenever they stop, very bad things are going to happen, right? He said the unemployment numbers were not showing the real state of the economy, which he was right about. Here's another one from him. This is on YouTube again. You can watch him say it yourself. This was September 14th, 2015, so this was about a year before he was elected. He said, it's not a question of unfair, because the host was asking him, is this economy unfair? Like the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And he says, it's not a question of unfair. It's a false economy that we're living in. We're in a bubble. And more importantly, when you look at unemployment in this country, we have close to 100 million people that are out of work. And yet we have 5.3% unemployment rate, which is a total joke. I think the real number is probably into the 30s, like 30% unemployment. Somebody I actually read the other day said it's actually 42%, and that's the real number. You know, when you get out there, you see tremendously unhappy people, and then you read, oh, the jobs numbers. Well, it's a phony number, because when you stop looking for a job, you're no longer in that statistic. So if you're looking for a job and you stop, you're no longer in the statistic, John. And then they say it's 5.2, 5.3%. It's not 5.3%. It's in the 20s, 30s. It could even be in the 40s. And there are a lot of unhappy people out there. And it's just, this was made up by the politicians for the politicians, the accounting method, so that they could look good. But let me tell you something. The Obama administration, we have tremendous unemployment in this country. And he's right. Now, the 42% is probably overstated for sure. But the unemployment rate was not 5%. It's not 3% or 4% now. He's right. It was a phony number, because the only people that are counted as unemployed are the people that are actually receiving unemployment checks. So when you've been unemployed for a long time and you don't get the checks anymore, you're not unemployed by the statistic. Or if you just quit looking, right? Maybe you did have a job and you just decided that it's just not worth it to work anymore. Or maybe you had a really good job and then you lost that really good job and the only job you can get is just some lousy minimum wage thing and you don't really have to have the money, so you just quit working or whatever. But you would still be working if you could. None of those people are counted in the official unemployment rate. So that's what Trump was talking about. And he was absolutely right. Here's another one. This is, he was on YouTube, or he was the video's on YouTube. He was saying this right before the election, just days before the election, November 4th, 2016. He said, "At the core of my contract is my plan to bring back our jobs. About time. The terrible jobs report that just came out shows the number of people not in the workforce increased by another 425,000 people last month. That's why you see these phony numbers about 5% unemployed. People are stopping. They're not looking for work anymore because they can't get a job and they take them off the rolls. The numbers are an absolute disaster. Labor force participation has fallen to its lowest level in nearly 40 years. That's what's happened. Nearly one in four people in their prime working years are not working. They want to work, they're not working. After 8 years, Obama is the first president in modern history not to have a single year of 3% growth. We're going at an average of probably 1% to 2%. Nobody even knows. Nobody believes the numbers anyway. The numbers they put out are phony. As far as I'm concerned, for millions of Americans, it's an economic nightmare." And he's right. The labor force participation rate is the real number that matters. That's the number that tells you how many Americans are actually in the labor force. And that number has been falling for decades. And it's just kind of flattened out just in the last couple of years. But it is, like he said, it's still at the lowest it's been in 40 years. There are less people in the labor force now than there have ever been. There's not jobs for them, so they're not working and they're not counted in the statistic. Or if they're working, they're working some, you know, part-time, low-paying job or something like that. He was right about all that. Now he says that we have the greatest economy in the history of the country, and he brags about how low unemployment is. Here's what he said on Twitter, June 4th, 2018. "This is my 500th day in office, and we have accomplished a lot. Many believe more than any president in his first 500 days. Many, meaning him and, Sean Spicer or something, his press secretary. But anyway, massive tax and regulation cuts, military and vets, lower crime and illegal immigration, stronger borders, judgeships, best economy and jobs ever, caps, and much more." He is a very humble man, you can tell by these tweets. Here's another Twitter quote from him. This is just recently, July 2nd, 2019. "The economy is the best it has ever been," in all caps. "Even much of the fake news is giving me credit for that. Best it's ever been." Here's another tweet, July 2nd, 2017. This is a couple of years ago. "Stock market at an all-time high, unemployment at lowest levels in years, wages will start going up, and our base has never been stronger." Yeah, the wages really haven't been going up, Mr. Trump. And then here's another one. May 3rd, 2019. "Jobs, jobs, jobs. Jobs surge in April. Unemployment rate falls to the lowest since 1969. Now, it was just, you know, the numbers were all fake before he got into office, but not anymore. And that's actually what Trump says. So we'll see that here. This is pretty funny. "So less than 2 months after assuming office, President Trump said that the numbers used to be phony, but they aren't anymore. I mean, the market was a bubble. Unemployment was fake. When he gets into office, immediately the market's just the best it's ever been, and the numbers aren't fake anymore. Imagine that." Here's the following from the press conference with Press Secretary Sean Spicer. That's the guy I was trying to think of before. Sean Spicer at the White House. This is on March 10th, 2017, just a couple of months after Trump gets sworn in. Spicer, he's addressing the press. He says, "Obviously, we're very pleased to see the jobs report that came out this morning. It's great news for American workers. During the first full month of the Trump presidency, the economy added 235,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.7%. Notably, we also saw significant growth in the construction, manufacturing, and mining sectors. The unemployment rate ticked down, and labor force participation rate ticked up." And then a journalist asked him, "In the past, the president has referred to particular job reports as phony or totally fiction. Does the president believe that this jobs report was accurate and a fair way to measure the economy?" Now listen to this. You got to watch this for yourself, okay? You might not even believe me if I just read it to you. Here's what Spicer says. "Yeah, I talked to the president prior to this. He said, to quote him very clearly, They may have been phony in the past, but it's very real now. I kid you not.
In 2 months.
Yeah. The numbers just went from being total, I mean, the worst economy ever. All the numbers are fake, but now it's real. Yeah. I mean, if that's not hypocrisy, I don't know what is.
Isn't it lying, though?
It is lying, and he knows it. And that's why I say it is lying, because he said the truth before he was elected, and he was dead right about it.
What he does is, if he's got good numbers, he likes them. If he doesn't like them, then it's called fake news.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's totally unfalsifiable. I mean, you can't argue with somebody like that. Any fact that supports what they're saying is true, and any fact that doesn't is just a lie. It's like, you just can't win. The fundamentals of the economy did not change under Trump's tenure. I mean, it's the same thing that's been going on for the last 10 years. There's been no change in the trajectory of unemployment in the last 10 years, which includes nearly all of President Obama's tenure. I want you again, look at this chart of unemployment over the last 10 years and point out to me the election of Donald Trump. So this is unemployment, and it's, you see right there, right at the very beginning when unemployment was going up, that was when we were just coming out of the recession. That was right at the end of the recession. And then when we get out of the recession there in 2009, you watch the unemployment rate fall, and it goes down, 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 the whole way down to today, to 2019. Show me where the election of Trump is. You would think that unemployment was just soaring and then Trump got in and then it starts plummeting. No, it's the exact same chart. You cannot identify the election of Donald Trump on that chart. It's no different. President Trump was right about the unemployment numbers being misleading under Obama. He was totally right. The whole time that that unemployment number was going down, meaning that we were supposed to have more people employed, the labor force participation rate was also steadily falling, meaning that there were fewer people in the labor market. Now, here's a chart of the labor force participation. This is a chart of how many people are actually working, okay? Now, if unemployment is going down, labor force participation should be going up. There should be more people working, but look at this. This goes the whole way back to 1999, so this is not only Obama, it's not only Trump, it's not only Bush, it's all of them. It's a matter of the Federal Reserve. The president's got very little to do with it. It's the Federal Reserve with these low interest rates, which destroys the economy and destroys the value of the money, and that's really what the whole problem is. But anyway, here's the labor force participation. You see here, right in 2009, this would have been when Obama got in, and you see it's just labor force participation is falling, less and less people in the labor market. And then you get right down to 2015, and it spikes up just a little bit. But if you notice there, if you look there, Donald Trump's election would have been right between 15 and 17, right? It was the end of 2016. And you look, it spiked up before he got in. And remember, nobody thought he was going to get in, so it had nothing to do with him. And then it's flattened out ever since. Yep, just it's basically going nowhere. So it spiked up before he got in and then flattened out, not doing anything. So all this talk about jobs, 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 labor force participation has not changed since he got into office. Has not changed. The unemployment figures were going down because of people leaving the labor market and not collecting unemployment anymore, just like Trump had said before he was elected. And because of people's full-time jobs, before the recession being replaced by part-time jobs after it. And that's really what happened. That's all these jobs that were created. What happens is you got people that are losing good full-time jobs and then taking on two or three part-time jobs. And then the numbers say, hey, we're making all these jobs. Yeah, you're giving somebody two crappy jobs when they had a good one before that. So as the above chart shows, the labor force participation rate bottomed out and began to increase in November 2015, a whole year before the election of Donald Trump. After rising slightly, like I said, then it just pretty much flattened out until now. Now remember what candidate Trump said about the labor force participation number just before the election, when it was about the same as it is now, 2.5 years into his presidency. He says, quote, "These numbers are an absolute disaster. Labor force participation has fallen to its lowest level in nearly 40 years. That's what's happened. Nearly one in four people in their prime working years are not working. They want to work. They're not working." That's what he said in 2016, when the labor force participation rate is the same as it is now, 2.5 years later. Here's another one. Candidate Trump rightly criticized President Obama for never reaching 3% GDP growth during any year of his presidency. GDP is gross domestic product. It's a measure of the output of the economy. And typically, in a growing economy, in a healthy economy, output continues to go up at, 3, 4, 5, 6%, something like that. That would be a healthy economy. But Obama, in the recovery, never reached 3%. Trump was right about that. Here's what Trump says here in the same YouTube video. You can see it. This is in 2016, November 4th. He says, after 8 years, Obama is the first president in modern history not to have a single year of 3% growth. We're growing at an average of probably 1% to 2%. Nobody even knows. Nobody believes the numbers anyway. The numbers they put out are phony as far as I'm concerned. For millions of Americans, it's an economic nightmare. Now, you would think then Trump got in and we're doing like 6, 8% GDP growth, right? But guess what? President Trump has not reached 3% GDP growth in his first 2 years either. Not for the year. One quarter, he's had over 3%, but Obama had plenty of quarters over 3%. He had a quarter over 5%. He had several quarters over 4%. But for the year, he never had one over 3%. Right here, you can see this chart, 2017 and 2018, Trump's 2 years, 2.4%, 2.9%. Look back at 2014 and 2015 with Obama. 2.5%, 2.9%. That was when the economy was the worst it's ever been. All the numbers were fake, right? Just everything was horrible, right? And it was better than it is under Trump, because at least Obama had 2.5 and 2.9. Trump's had 2.4 and 2.9. Can you say hypocrite? Obama had four quarters with higher GDP growth than Trump's highest quarter so far. Just look at this chart here. And these are each one of these bars is the quarter. And you see Trump and Obama. Now, there's been more. With Obama, it was up and down. You see, and with Trump, it's been a little bit more steady. But when you look across there, he had a bunch of quarters that were higher than Trump's highest quarter. Trump nevertheless says we have the greatest economy in the history of the country. But the numbers certainly don't bear it out. Candidate Trump rightly criticized President Obama for the size of the national debt. Here are some tweets from Trump repeatedly condemning Obama during his presidency for the size of the national debt. This is from 2011. Barack Obama inherited $10.6 trillion in national debt, will leave after his first term with the debt at over $17.6 trillion. Here's Trump again on Twitter, 2011. Our national debt has grown by 30%, and a gallon of gas has doubled so far under Barack Obama. He is a disaster. Another one from 2011 on Twitter. Barack Obama has already added $5 trillion to the national debt in less than 3 years. We must defeat him in 2012. 2012, he tweeted. With our national debt passing $16 trillion during the DNC convention, Barack Obama has amassed more debt than the first 42 presidents. Scary. 2012, he tweeted again. Our $16 trillion national debt is now bigger than our $15 trillion GDP. If Obama is reelected, watch for an economic meltdown in 2013. 2012, he tweeted again, concerns over the national debt are stopping businesses from hiring and expanding. You're right. Obama's policies are unsustainable, and that's the same thing that's happening now. Here he is in 2012 again, our $17 trillion national debt and $1 trillion yearly budget deficits are a national security risk of the highest order. President Trump has $1 trillion yearly budget deficits now. In 2012, he said it was, I will repeat, a national security risk of the highest order. Now it's the best economy in the world. Isn't that funny? And then one more, 2014. Yesterday, our national debt topped a record $18 trillion. Over 44% has accrued under Obama. A real mess. Now, as we mentioned earlier, candidate Trump said he would pay off the national debt in 8 years. Here's a quote from The Hill. Donald Trump insists that he would be able to wipe out the United States debt in 8 years. The Republican presidential frontrunner said in a wide-ranging interview with The Washington Post that he's able to get rid of more than $19 trillion debt, quote, over a period of 8 years. Yeah. It's at 22.5 now. Now, of course, once President Trump was elected, he started to increase the national debt faster than President Obama did in his last few years in office. Here's a quote for you. This is from Business Insider, not exactly a left-wing establishment as far as I know. This is from July 25th, 2019. President Donald Trump has blasted bipartisan politicians for failing to address the federal debt and repeatedly vowed to eliminate it within 8 years. On his watch, it has exploded to more than $22 trillion. The country was already headed for a $1 trillion deficit this year. Yet the president has made clear his support for the federal budget deal reached Monday, which would increase spending by billions against a backdrop of lower tax receipts. House Republicans, quote, House Republicans, this is Trump, House Republicans should support the two-year budget agreement, which greatly helps our military and our vets, end quote. The president said Thursday of the bill, which would lift the debt ceiling until July 2021 and permanently end a series of automatic spending cuts. Quote, I am totally with you, Trump said. And they did. They lifted the debt ceiling until 2021. 2 years, there's no debt ceiling. So they can just spend with abandon. Doesn't matter. There's no limit to it for the next 2 years, thanks to Trump and the Congress. Got some following charts here that show that President Trump has run bigger deficits than Barack Obama did in his last few years in office. And the official on-budget deficit for the years 2019 to 2022 are projected to be over $1 trillion per year. So here are the deficits right here in this chart. And you can see these are in billions, so this 1,200 would be like $1.2 trillion. Okay, so Obama in 9, 10, and 11 was over $1 trillion. That was on budget. And then you look here, and it started to decrease. From 11 the whole way down to 15, it was on the decrease. And it was just over $400 billion in 15. 16, it increased a little bit. And then 17, 18 keeps increasing more. Now, like I said, this is on budget. So 17 is looks like it was about 650, and 18 was almost $800 billion. But remember, we did the math with the debt where he started and where we are now, and it's $1 trillion a year. This doesn't even include all of the spending. This is just on budget, not the off budget stuff. But you can see the deficits were going down the last several years of Obama, and they started going up whenever Trump got elected, or they started going up a little bit before that, but they continued to rise after Trump was elected. And then the next chart shows us the projected budgets for 19 through 24. And look at that, over $1 trillion are projected the whole way out through 2022. $1 trillion budget deficits every year in the greatest economy in the history of the country, according to President Trump. Why are we running these huge budget deficits if we have the greatest economy ever? Why is the government spending all this money? Now, conservatives are supposed to be small government. They're supposed to be against spending. And yet they love Trump, and he spends $1 trillion. He drives us in debt $1 trillion every year, and they'll defend him to their death. I don't understand it. Look at this following chart and see that President Trump is spending out of control just like Obama did. So here's the debt. Once again, please point out to me the election of Donald Trump. Right? You'd think it would be, you know, Trump condemned Obama so much, you'd think the deficit would be going up, 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 and then as soon as Trump gets in, phew, not only does the deficit go down, the whole debt, I mean, it's just wiped out. It should be just flatlining right there at the, you know, it should be down to zero here in a few years. But look at the chart. You can't tell the difference, right? Except we're going to be able to tell the difference because it's going to start to shoot up again, because Trump's spending more than Obama did. Here's another area of hypocrisy. Candidate Trump rightly condemned the Fed for keeping interest rates so low for so long and for doing quantitative easing, which is termed QE, which means money printing, basically. The Fed prints up a bunch of money and they buy up a bunch of assets, government bonds and things like that. Trump condemned them for this. Here's a quote from Twitter. This is 2011. He says, the Fed's reckless policies of low interest and flooding the market with dollars needs to be stopped, or we will face record inflation. So Trump fully understands that low interest rates are going to cause inflation and it's bad for the economy. He totally gets it, right? He said in September 2016 that the Fed keeping interest rates low kills savers. He said this. This is a quote here from Real Clear Politics, November 12, 2016. Quote, and you know the people who are hurt the most are the people that saved all their lives and thought they were going to live off the interest. Those people are getting absolutely creamed. That was Donald Trump, and he was absolutely right. It is. It's criminal what they've done to us. The last 10 years, you get zero interest in the bank. Every one of us would have twice as much, almost twice as much money as he has now if we could have had our savings in just a regular old CD doing 5 or 6% interest. Every one of us would have almost twice as much money as we have now. 7.2% in 10 years, you double your money. So we'd have almost twice as much money as we have right now. If it wasn't for the Federal Reserve, they are literally robbing us through inflation. Trump said the same thing, or this is the same article. Quote, Trump said that for his own business is, and that's their mess up, not mine, his own business of real estate, he, quote, loves low interest rates, but average Americans are hurt by it. Quote, the ones who did it right, they saved their money and they cut down on their mortgages and now they're practically getting zero interest on the money, Trump said. Those, quote, those people have really been, you could almost say, discriminated against. Yes, that's true. During Obama's presidency, Trump condemned the Fed for destroying the dollar through inflation, quantitative easing, or money printing. Here's what he said on Twitter, 2011. The Fed's reckless monetary policy is going to create record inflation. 2011, again in October, he said, money printing is neither a short or long-term solution to our country's economic woes. The Fed is destroying... I could not find the other Twitter quote, because on Twitter it used to be 140 characters, and then if you wanted to make a longer message, you put the dot, 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 and then you made another tweet. Well, now they have them linked together, but they didn't used to, so I couldn't find, without just scrolling through thousands of them, I couldn't find the rest of it. I think he's going to say the Fed's destroying the dollar or something like that. And then he goes on to say in a different tweet anyway. Here's another tweet, 2012. The Fed is destroying the dollar. When inflation hits the economy, then even more jobs will go overseas. He totally understood what the Fed was doing, ruining the dollar through low interest rates. Here's another one from Twitter, 2012. It says the Fed should not do QE3. That was their third quantitative easing program when they bought up the government bonds and the mortgage-backed securities. The Fed should not do QE3. Neither the economy nor the dollar can withstand another round of artificial liquidity. This is in July of 2012, another tweet. He says, my Squawk Box NBC interview discussing why the Fed shouldn't do a QE3, Barack Obama's college records 2012 election. Here's another one from 2012 in September. He says, QE3 is going to further sink the dollar into oblivion, creates artificial numbers for short-term market gains. There will be a big price to pay in the future. See, he gets it. He totally got it. The quantitative easing, what the Fed was doing, was giving market gains. It was increasing the stock market on the short term. That's why I say he's a liar, because he understood all this stuff perfectly. It's unbelievable. Now he calls for the exact opposite thing, that he's in power. And here's one more, 2012. He says, QE3, a political favor for Obama, will cause record inflation on food and fuel. This hits low-income families the hardest. Big mistake. A political favor. And you know what he's asking Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, for now? A political favor. He wants him to lower interest rates, and he wants him to do QE. And I'll give you the quotes for that. So now that he's in office, now President Trump condemns the Fed for raising interest rates, and he calls for lowering of rates and quantitative easing. Before he was in, he condemned them for lowering interest rates. Now he condemns them for raising interest rates. Before he was in office, he condemned them for low interest rates and QE. Now he says they need to do low interest and QE, low interest rates and QE. And we have the greatest economy in the history of the country. Why do you need low interest rates and money printing if you have the greatest economy in the history of the country? You know why? Because Trump doesn't really believe we have the greatest economy. Trump knows we have a bubble economy, and Trump doesn't want to see it crash. He wants to see it continue, so he wants the Fed to do the same thing. He knows. He's lying. That's what he's doing. Here's an article from Bankrate. This is on November 28, 2018. President Donald Trump has let loose again on Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell for raising interest rates, while Powell indicated that further increases in 2019 are not a certainty. In an interview with the Washington Post, the president added to comments he made in October that expressed disapproval of Powell. Quote, "So far, I'm not even a little bit happy with my selection of Jay." That's Jerome Powell's, his nickname's Jay. "Not even a little bit. And I'm not blaming anybody, but I am just telling you, I think that the Fed is way off base with what they are doing." What they were doing is exactly what Trump said they should be doing before he got into office. But they're way off base now that they're actually doing what he knows needs to be done and what he said needs to be done. This is Trump on Twitter. This is April 30th, 2019, earlier this year. He says, "China is adding great stimulus to its economy while at the same time keeping interest rates low. Our Federal Reserve has incessantly lifted interest rates, even though inflation is very low, and instituted a very big dose of quantitative tightening. We have the potential to go up like a rocket, and get this, if we did some lowering of rates, like 1 point, one interest rate, 1% interest, and some quantitative easing." He's asking for lower interest rates and quantitative easing because we can juice the market again. "Yes, we are doing very well at 3.2% GDP, but with our wonderfully low inflation, we could be setting major records and at the same time make our national debt start to look small." Yeah, we're going to make a $22.5 trillion debt look small, right, as he's spending a trillion a year. Here's another quote on Twitter. This is just last month, July 19th, 2019. "Because of the faulty thought process we have going on for us at the Federal Reserve, we pay much higher rates, much higher interest rates than countries that are no match for us economically. In other words, our interest costs are much higher than other countries when they should be lower." Correct. Calling for lower interest rates. Here's another tweet, July 29th, 2019. "The EU and China will further lower interest rates and pump money into their systems, making it much easier for their manufacturers to sell product. In the meantime, and with very low inflation, our Fed does nothing and probably will do very little by comparison." Too bad. Before it was too bad that they kept interest rates low. Now it's too bad that they won't lower them. Hypocrite. Here's another one. This is a quote from Market Watch. This is July 30th, 2019. "Speaking to reporters on the White House lawn, Trump said he wanted, quote, a large cut from the central bank. He also said he wants the Fed to immediately halt shrinking its balance sheet and a process dubbed quantitative tightening." And then one more quote from that article. "For them to have done quantitative tightening and also higher interest rates simultaneously, I think, was a big mistake." It's funny, you didn't think like that a couple of years ago. Blatant hypocrisy. Okay, now this is a minor thing, but it's still interesting nonetheless. Candidate Trump condemned Obama for as much for all the golfing he did while he was in office. Okay, here's a litany of tweets from Donald Trump whenever President Obama was golfing in office. This is 2011. "Barack Obama played golf yesterday. He now heads to a 10-day vacation in Martha's Vineyard. Nice work ethic." 2011 again. "I play golf to relax. My country is in great shape. Barack Obama plays golf to escape work while America goes down the drain." Another one, 2012. "Too busy playing golf. Barack Obama sends form letters with electronic signature to the parents of fallen SEALs." 2013. "President Obama is not busy talking to Congress about Syria. He's playing golf." Go figure. 2014. "While Obama vacations, golfs, attends parties and jazz concerts, ISIS is chopping heads off of journalists." 2014. "Can you believe that with all the problems and difficulties facing the U.S., President Obama spent the day playing golf. Worse than Carter." And then in 2014, "We pay for Obama's travel so he can fundraise millions so Democrats can run on lies. Then we pay for his golf." Now, let's look at President Obama's golfing record here. He golfed 306 times during his 8 years in office. Here's a quote from Golf Digest. This is from 2017, January 19th, 2017, right when Trump was sworn in. It says, "Obama played 306 rounds while in office, a healthy amount, but well short of the estimated 1,200 rounds Woodrow Wilson played during his term." You know, I wish Woodrow Wilson would have played about 5,000 rounds of golf and kept us out of World War I and all the other horrible things he did. But anyway, "or the 800 rounds that Dwight Eisenhower played as POTUS. Still, it's more than his immediate predecessors, George W. Bush or Bill Clinton, both of whom were golfers as well. So Obama played 306 rounds in his 8 years. Okay, that's a lot of golf, but doesn't hold a candle to Trump. President Trump has golfed 220 times in his 2.5 years in office and is on pace to spend 745 days on the golf course during his 8 years as president if he's reelected. Here's a quote from Golf News Net, August 13th, 2019, so just last month. Says, how many times has Trump played golf as president of the United States? Since taking office on January 20th, 2017, Mr. Trump has reportedly been on the grounds of his golf courses or played golf elsewhere 220 times since becoming president, and that's as of August 12th, 2019. The cost of Trump's golf rounds for the American taxpayer varies by round and course, but it has totaled so far in the tens of millions of dollars. He previously was on pace to visit his golf clubs more than 650 times in an 8-year presidency. That's almost twice as much as Obama. However, his pace as of August 6, 2018 now indicates Trump would spend as much as 745 days of his presidency at a golf course if he wins a second term and serves both terms to completion. That's over twice as much golf as Obama was playing. Is it a big deal? Well, I don't know. It's costing taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. I don't know. The way I look at it, the more the president's on the golf course, the less stupid, wicked things he can do. So go play more golf, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, it's still hypocrisy. Now, we've talked about so many things in this study. I mean, all the things that are important to conservatives, right? Abortion, LGBT, gay rights, gun control, right? Spending deficits, you name it, right? We've talked about so many things in this study, right? And despite all these things, as Trump said, quote, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters. And he's right. I think he's right. It doesn't seem to matter what he does. Nobody cares. For some reason, I don't understand why. Maybe it's because they like it because he bashes the media and he's politically incorrect. And that's all fine, right? Maybe that's why they like him. I don't know why they like him. Maybe they really believe that the economy is great. I don't know. It's strange. But I'll tell you what, it's showing partiality is what it is. Because Trump is doing the exact same things that Obama did. Exactly. In fact, he's doing more gun control than Obama did. Right? He's spending more than Obama did in his last several years in office. He's doing the exact same things. He's probably just as favorable to the LGBT people as Obama ever was. He supports the gay marriage ruling. What about the guy? I mean, there's nothing better. At least in these major things we looked at anyway. He talks better. I mean, he says he's a Christian. Okay, so what? Obama said he was a Christian too. Look at 1 Timothy 5 and verse 21. Showing partiality is sinful. We shouldn't do that. We should be people that love truth. And just look at the man and look at the facts and forget about whether you like him or not. And what do the facts say? What is this guy? 1 Timothy 5 and verse 21. Some people think I have an agenda. You know, I got some guy online accusing me of having some agenda. I don't. What does that even mean? What is my agenda? To show the truth about Donald Trump? Am I trying to get some Democrat in? Of course not. The Democrats are worse than Trump. Right? I was no fan of Obama. I'm certainly no fan of Biden or Sanders or any of the rest of these guys. I'm just showing you the truth about Trump, and I'm showing you that you ought to think twice about supporting a guy. And not only that, he's a blasphemer, he's an adulterer. I mean, all these horrible sins. You ought to think twice about supporting a guy like this. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 21 says, I charge thee before God and the Lord Jesus Christ and the elect angels that thou observe these things without preferring one before another, doing nothing by partiality. Of course, this is a commandment to a preacher, that a preacher can't show partiality. But guess what? I'm supposed to be an example to the believers, right? 1 Timothy 4:12, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. Well, if I'm not supposed to use partiality, neither are Christians, right? If pastors aren't supposed to, neither are Christians. Look at James 3 and verse 17. James 3 and verse 17. Says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. That's the wisdom from above. If you have the wisdom of God, you are not going to be partial. You're not going to be a hypocrite. You're not going to condemn Obama for the very things that Trump does and praise Trump for what you condemned Obama for. That is partiality. Christians would have and did condemn President Obama for doing the same things that they either tolerate in President Trump or praise him for. And this is shameful. Look at Proverbs 24 and verse 23. Proverbs 23 and verse 24-23. These things also belong to the wise. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment. Not good, and it's not wise. And unfortunately, with some of them anyway, I'm not saying this is all of them, but some of them, because they think that Trump's going to make them wealthy, they'll praise him no matter what, right? It doesn't matter. They'll support him, forget about his views on gay marriage, forget about his views on LGBT, transgender bathrooms, forget about his $1 trillion a year deficits, forget about bombing tens of thousands of civilians and starving people to death in Yemen, and forget about all that stuff. Forget about everything. As long as the stock market's going up and my 401k is increasing, he's a good guy. And remember what Franklin Graham said? Franklin Graham said, you know, it's incredible, 8,000 points on the Dow. Everybody's got a 401k. It's good for you. My ministry is good for my ministry. You know, the Dow's up 30%. It's all about the money for these people. I'm not saying that's what, you know, the average Joe is about, but some of these guys, they are. Look at Proverbs 28 and verse 21. They're going to have egg on their face whenever the Dow goes down and their 401ks go down. And they spent all those years touting Trump. Proverbs 28 and verse 21. To have respect of persons is not good, for a piece of bread that man will transgress. If you have somebody that shows respect to persons, they show favoritism, and they overlook some wickedness in one person because they like him for whatever reason, right? For a piece of bread, he'll transgress. You increase his 401k because the stock market goes up, I'll overlook anything that Trump does. Doesn't matter to me as long as my 401k goes up. That's horrible. Christians should do better than that. Look at James 2 and verse 1. Now, I'm not saying this is everybody's motivation for liking Trump. It definitely is Franklin Graham's because he said it out of his own mouth. And there's probably plenty of people that think like that too. James 2 and verse 1. It says, my brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. Another term for favoritism. And then I'm going to leave you with this. President Trump is part of God's judgment on this nation. He's not the Savior. He's not the chosen one, right? He's not the King of Israel. He's not the second coming of God like he thinks he is. Remember what he said? Wow, thanks for the compliment. Remember that? King of Israel, second coming of God. I am the chosen one, Trump says. No, he's not. He is chosen by God. That's true. He's chosen by God to be a judgment upon this nation. Look at Daniel 4 and verse 17. Daniel 4 and verse 17. It says, this matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Those are the people that God sets over the kingdoms of men, the basest of men. Now, let's just keep your finger there and compare. Let's see, what does this mean? What is a base man? Turn over here to Acts 17 and verse 5. Acts 17 and verse 5. You know what? If we had a godly country, we wouldn't have a base man at the helm of it. We'd probably have a good man, because we'd be voting in a good man, and God would be blessing us. But now we have the most proud man the world's ever seen. Acts 17 and verse 5. But the Jews which believed not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort, and gathered a company, and set all the city on an uproar, and assaulted the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. Lewd fellows of the baser sort. The Lord setteth over the kingdoms of the men the basest of men. Just look at the wicked kings that God gave the wicked nation of Israel. Judah had some bad ones too, but Israel especially, and Israel was more wicked than Judah was. Look at all those horrible kings. And you bet if one of those kings would have managed to get the stock market juiced up, I'm sure all those Jews would have said, this guy's wonderful. He's like the king of Israel. He is the king of Israel. Yeah. This is like the second coming of God, or the first coming of God, or whatever. He's great. I love him. I mean, 30% on the Dow. I mean, look at our 401ks. This is wonderful. Yeah. King Ahab, what a great guy. I mean, look at the economy. Oh, man. I mean, forget the fact he's a murderer. Who cares about that, right?
But, Pastor Wagner, don't you think that some of the Christians who voted Trump were actually deceived by his
lies? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Right? Oh, it's totally, like I said in the beginning of this study, it's totally different. If you voted for him the first time, a lot of the stuff that we just read here was really good. Yes. He condemned the Fed. He condemned the big spending. Stuff was really good. Absolutely, they were tricked by him. Look at what he did. He does the exact opposite when he gets in. Yeah, totally different. I'm not condemning people that voted for him the first time. I'm talking about knowing what we're knowing right now, what we see has happened in the last 2 years, and still thinking that he's a great guy and supporting him and touting him and wearing his pins and bumper stickers and paying.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Exactly. Exactly.
By the way, I didn't vote for him.
Well, you're not even a citizen. Undocumented workers cannot vote. So.
Yet.
Yeah, right. Wait till the Democrats get in next time. Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, they probably can. I mean, heck, dead people can vote in this country. There's every year they talk about how many dead people on the rolls had voted. And
she won't be able to vote though, because she's not an illegal alien.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to wait till you get your citizenship. What is happening is what we talked about here probably a couple of months ago in Proverbs chapter 1. We're being made to eat the fruit of our own ways. We're being ruled by presidents that we have chosen who are taking away our liberties and bankrupting us morally and financially. That's what's happening. And we're getting what we deserve. Proverbs 1, 29 through 32. This will be the last verse. In verse 29, Proverbs 1, 29, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would none of my reproof. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own ways and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. That's the state that we're in. We as a nation have rejected God's counsel. We've rejected his wisdom. We've rejected his word. We've taken him out of public life. Out of the schools, out of everything, right? We've totally rejected him. They teach evolution, which is a complete denial of God and of creation. And we've been turned over to a delusion. And we are eating of the fruit of our own ways. We have the presidents we have because, I think anyway, because we elect them. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe Diebold elects them. But anyway, I mean, they still have a lot of popular support, you know. Whoever, whether or not they're actually getting the votes they claim or not, it doesn't matter. We have who we have because we deserve to have them. And whoever the next guy we get in 2020 is, and I don't think it's going to be Trump, but I could be wrong, we're going to deserve him too, or her. So anyway, that's going to take care of the study on Donald Trump, and we're going to get back to, Lord willing, Proverbs next week, Lord willing. So let the hate mail come in, because I made a lot of friends on this one. Of course, it'd be nice if people would actually listen to it first, you know, and maybe consider what is said and look up, you know, look at the YouTube videos, watch him say it out of your own mouth, but it's probably not going to happen.
Honestly, Donald Trump has